only for 3 minutes.
Thank you. Proceed.
This issue represents one issue, whether the admission of the employer was a jail call, whether it was a conversation with his wife, was admitted in violation of privacy. Blair's conversation was private under the terms of the Privacy Act. The marital privilege in this case is implicated, and that's what separates Blair's case from all the other cases that were decided in the jail call and the Privacy Act context. And the hook for this argument.
Why would it have any application where, as the trial court found, they were conspiring to commit a crime?
That's right. The judge got it wrong on that. Yes, they were conspiring to commit a crime. And the judge admitted the jail call under the Privacy Act on the theory that there was a so-called crime fraud exception to the marital privilege. The problem with that is that Washington doesn't recognize that exception. More importantly, the legislature does not recognize the exception. The Privacy Act, or rather the privilege statute, sets forth a number of exceptions to when the marital privilege does not apply. For example, when a spouse commits a crime against another, that's an example of an exception that Washington recognizes. Legislature doesn't recognize crime fraud exception. And that is dispositive of this issue, whether it exists, since the legislature is trying to.
And why is this different than the cases where DOC is reading mail between inmates and spouses, and the court said that's fine. Everybody knows that mail is going to be read.
Right, and I believe this court may be referring to the Stately Grove case, Stately Hawkins with the Latton Grove, Stately Smith with the case, none of which are Privacy Act cases. So, yes, in those type of cases, though, they said, oh, there's no privacy interest when the inmate knows.
Everybody knew this phone call was going to be listened to, recorded, and should have had an expectation that if they said something stupid, it would be used.
Excuse me, the Supreme Court's decision in State v. Monica, which is the hook for this argument, where the Supreme Court expressly recognizes that simply because the inmate knows that the conversation is going to be recorded or monitored, that does not defeat the protection of privacy. So you think of what might have been a sound issue back to say what Grove had a sound issue.
In Grove, it said there's two requirements for the marital privilege to apply, are there not? The conversation was intended confidential and that there be a successful communication. Where was the successful communication here?
There was no successful communication.
So and why does the marital privilege not apply then?
No, I understand where the judge, Your Honor, is coming from, and that state's made this very argument that, well, there's no successful communication here, therefore the marital privilege has no role to play in this privacy analysis. The counterargument, and one that I'm advancing, is that when the Supreme Court in Monaco referenced privileged communications, they didn't mean successful privileged communications. And we know that because it doesn't make any sense in the jail call context. Just like in Monica and in all jail call cases, the communications are monitored. They're recorded. So there can never be a successful communication in that context. And yet the Supreme Court in Monica attached significance to this idea that, well, we conclude that there's no reasonable expectation of privacy here because the communication was not to his lawyer or was, quote, unquote, otherwise privileged. So they meant something when they said that, and they couldn't mean a successful communication, because none can ever exist in this context. It's up to us to figure out, well, what did they mean? And the argument is, well, the Supreme Court must have meant
if you take in mind that they must have known about Grove when they wrote the decision, they know what's required for a successful marital privilege. When they said otherwise privileged, obviously they weren't talking about this one.
No, I disagree with that, Your Honor. Okay. I disagree. Monica, in referring to that, the only sensible interpretation of what the Supreme Court meant there was that they were referring to a presumptively privileged communication. Spousal privilege, attorney-client, clergy privilege, they're all on the same footing in this regard, that when you got the relationship there, the types of communications are presumptively privileged. And then the question becomes, well, when can they be destroyed? And that's when you get into this idea, well, if they're not successfully kept confidential, then the privilege fails. And all three privileges are on the same footing in that regard. And so when Monica is talking about this, they're talking about this notion of the presumptively attached privilege. Like, that's the only interpretation that makes sense, because that's the only type of privileged communication that could even occur in the jail call context, again, because they're always monitored. So if we adopt the state's argument here that, well, no, what the Supreme Court meant was only successful confidences, that just doesn't make sense, because there can never be one. And so what the Supreme Court said just would be a nullity and not make sense, and that's not.
Or they may limit it to the attorney-client privilege and the clergy privilege and stop there.
But they didn't, though.
They didn't have to in that case.
No, they didn't have to, but the Supreme Court in Monica was very careful in crafting its holding in that case.
Well, and not foreclosing the possibility of something other than the attorney-client privilege, which has other constitutional protections.
But then if it had just stopped at attorney-client, it would have stopped at attorney-client. But the Supreme Court then, or otherwise privileged, and it didn't even stop at clergy. It could have just said, well, because this communication wasn't between attorney-client, because the communication wasn't with the clergy and the penitent, therefore no expectation of privacy. But it says otherwise privileged, which leaves open the door for the argument that Blair's making to me.
That much we agree.
Very good. And I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Stephanie Guthrie, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney for King County, and I represent the state of Washington in this case. This court should hold that the recording of Mr. Blair's jail call to his wife was not a violation of the Privacy Act for multiple reasons. Blair had no subjective expectation of privacy. Any such expectation was objectively unreasonable. He has failed to establish that his call is protected by the marital privilege.
Wouldn't that be true if he was talking to the clergy on the same call and they both had to press the button?
Which part, Your Honor?
They wouldn't have an expectation of privacy.
Well, but I think the difference there is that the Privacy Act specifically prohibits recording of the clergy penitent calls, and therefore I think despite the audio warning, you could have a reasonable expectation of privacy because the law prohibits recording that, just like with the attorney-client privilege. And that, I think, is what Monica was referring to, that there are a couple situations, a couple privileges that the Privacy Act preserves for inmates. But there are only two, and the legislature had a very good reason for preserving those two. The whole concern that justifies recording jail calls centers around the jail concerns regarding safety and jail security. And calls to an attorney or a priest are unlikely to threaten those concerns. But it was very reasonable for the legislature to decide that calls to one's spouse, in fact, are quite likely to threaten those security concerns, because the first person an inmate may turn to for help in conspiring to introduce contraband into the jail, as we see here, or tampering with witnesses or what have you, is often going to be their significant other. And so the legislature made a very reasoned choice to preserve two particular privileges. And at most, that is what Monica was referring to. I would note, it is technically dicta. They had already concluded that there was no reasonable expectation of privacy in that case, which presented no claim of privilege whatsoever, based solely on the fact that inmates have a reduced expectation of privacy and the fact that they were warned that the call was being recorded. We have additional findings here that not only were they warned, both Mr. Blair and his wife affirmatively acknowledged and consented to the recording by pressing the button, and that's an unchallenged finding of fact that they knew it was being recorded.
One of counsel's arguments, I think, is that when Monica chose the words "or privileged," it didn't choose the words "or as recognized exceptions to the Privacy Act." So if they use the word "privileged," that doesn't have to mean otherwise privileged, because any phone call is going to have that same warning, that same push button 3 acknowledging that. You wouldn't need any provision. It would serve no purpose.
I think Part of the problem is that the court in Modica, I think, was not being terribly precise with their language, precisely because the relevance of privilege was not an issue before that court in that case at all. It was a call to his grandmother. So I think we do have a situation here where they were clearly recognizing a concern that someone might someday make the argument, absent that language, that even a call to an attorney could be, there'd be no reasonable expectation of privacy if you just give the warning. And that's why they acknowledged we're not holding that a warning alone is always enough. But what they are saying is that, and when they said that, by the way, the cases they cite make clear they're distinguishing between cases of an unreasonable or unlikely interception, like a cordless phone call. And then they contrasted that with cases like Grove and Jones, where there was held to be no privacy act or no privacy violation when the defendant knew it was being recorded. And so in every case, when you have a situation where the defendant knows it's being recorded, chooses to speak anyway, and there's no hint of any sort of privacy act exception that would apply, in all those cases, the courts have found that there's simply no privacy act violation there. And that's exactly what we have here. Modica held there's no reasonable expectation of privacy under those circumstances. There is nothing in either Modica or the Privacy Act suggesting that the Privacy Act incorporates the spousal privilege. And for this court to infer that incorporation of this privacy of the spousal privilege would undercut the legislative choices that have been made about which calls are safe enough to allow recording or for the attorney-client privilege, there's a constitutional privilege, and so clearly that has to control. But the spousal privilege is not constitutional.
Well, wouldn't the interception of the call at least allow law enforcement to protect against the criminal conduct you're concerned about?
Yes.
But still be preclude the use of the conversation as evidence in a prosecution?
And that's one route the legislature could have gone.
Well, but haven't they already gone that way? Because the privilege only precludes the introduction of the evidence if you've taped it.
Yes, but I think the legislature has chosen not to do that. By not writing the spousal privilege into the Privacy Act, they've determined that those calls should be permitted to be used as evidence when the Privacy Act is otherwise followed. And I think there are good reasons for that. You know, in this case, we know from the trial court's findings that there are other alternatives to speak with your wife privately. Visiting hours, visits in person are not recorded. And in this case, we see there's no indication. Defendant argues that, it's impractical to do that. But we have his wife physically coming to the jail at the time the defendant told her to. So we know that there's no concern here that somehow a phone call was the only possible way to talk to her. So we know that, you know, they were choosing to use the phone call, knowing it was recorded, and affirmatively, explicitly consenting to the recording by pressing the button, as Archie held. That's express consent. And there's no suggestion here that that consent was in any way invalid or involuntary. The defendant's will was not overborne, which is the traditional standard for coercion.
Phone doesn't have a disclaimer that says, and by doing so, you're waiving any privilege and that the recorded testimony can be used against you in court.
No, but
if it had that disclaimer, wouldn't it be materially different than the disclaimer that it's being recorded when spouses have an expectation that they can't have their statements used against the other spouse?
But there is no a spouse can never have a reasonable expectation that a statement made to their spouse that is not private at the time it is made is protected, because that's not how the spousal privilege works. Spousal privilege is about protecting the fact that when a spouse tells something to their other spouse in confidence, and it's initially made in confidence, it will not later be used against them. But nothing ever says that you have the right to speak to your spouse at any time and not with other people around or other people listening and not have that used against you later. That's not how the privilege works.
Now, this wasn't argued below. Why should we even be tackling this issue when we had the fraud and crime exception applied below?
Well, as this court knows, it can affirm the trial court on any basis supported by the record. The trial court made a ruling based on the crime fraud exception. I think the Modica's holding that there's not a reasonable expectation of privacy and the fact that the spousal privilege has not been established here, which the defendant has the burden of doing, is a much clearer and cleaner path to affirm the trial court's ultimate result. There is not a lot of case law, or frankly, any case law that I'm aware of, about the spousal privilege and any crime fraud exception. That issue has not been addressed by these courts, as far as I'm aware. I think the court's ruling makes a lot of sense, but I think that the clear result that is required by our case law, both the case law about letters from jail not being protected by spousal privilege when they know that they're going to be read, there's just no basis to distinguish that from jail calls. And I think it was Archie, in fact, specifically said that there's no distinction between calls and letters when it comes to that context.
So you don't think there was authority for what the trial court did, but you're not conceding it was error?
No, I'm not. I think that the clearest reason the trial court was right is the arguments the state has laid out. I think the trial court, there's a lot of logic, I think, between the trial court's decision, but there's not a lot of case law. And so I think that the clearest reason that the trial court was correct is Modica and Grove and Smith and all the cases that say when you know your letter's going to be read or your call is going to be recorded, even when it's to your spouse, there simply is no reasonable expectation of privacy. And for that reason, there was no Privacy Act violation here. And we have the additional fact here, which Modica did not address, of consent. We have Archie's holding that pressing that button to acknowledge and agree to the recording is an express consent. And so that's yet another reason that the Privacy Act was not violated here, because the defendant and his wife both consented to the recording. And so therefore, even if they had had a spousal privilege, they waived it at that point. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
I'd like to respond to the state's argument that the Privacy Act puts the attorney-client privilege and the clergy privilege on a different footing than the marital privilege. There is a provision in the Privacy Act, a prophylactic provision, that directs the facility not to monitor, record attorney-client and clergy communications. The problem with the state's argument, though, is that if the facility goes ahead and does it anyway, records those such a conversation, then you don't have successfully kept confidence and the privilege fails. So the state's argument defeats itself, because in the end, if there is an interception of the communication, the privilege no longer is there for all three of those privileges, including the marital privilege. The other problem is that the state is arguing, well, you know, the Privacy Act in specifying the attorney-client and clergy communications as something not to be monitored, you know, evinces this legislative intent that, well, those types of things, if they are monitored, won't be admitted into court. But actually, that's not how the statute reads. If we look at the provision in the Privacy Act that talks about the remedy of excluding evidence that's in violation of the Act, that's 973.50. It's only information obtained in violation of 973.30. But the provision that the state's referencing, talking about these other privileges, is in 973.95, so it's a different provision altogether. The remedy of exclusion is not even tied to the provision that the state's
referencing. So you doubt that the court would exclude evidence obtained in violation of an express statute that prohibits the recording of that evidence?
By the plain terms of 973.50, yes, because it's only a violation of 973.30 that gets the exclusion. And 973.95 is a different provision altogether, so it doesn't work that way. In terms of, I guess, one other point that I'll make briefly is that, again, a lot of reliance is placed on this Grove case. A lot of reliance is placed on this notion that, well, the Blair knew the call was going to be recorded, therefore no expectation of privacy. That can't be reconciled with what Monica said, though. I mean, it's right in there. That conversation does not cease to be private simply because the participants in the conversation know it's going to be recorded. Monica, a Privacy Act case, has to control over anything that the Supreme Court might have said, you know, half a century ago in Grove. For all these reasons, I ask this court to reverse. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. All right.